Welcome to Nobel Conversations. In this episode, Josh Angrist and Hito Imbens sit down with Isaiah Andrews to discuss and disagree over the role of machine learning in applied econometrics.
So, of course, there are a lot of topics where you guys largely agree, but I'd like to turn to one where maybe you have some differences of opinion. So I'd love to hear some of your thoughts about machine learning and the role that it's playing and is going to play in economics.
I've looked at some data like this, the proprietary, so there's no published paper there, but it was an experiment that was done on some search algorithm. Mm. And the question was, sort of, it was about ranking things and changing the ranking. Mm. And it was sort of clear that that there was going to be a lot of heterogeneity there. Mm. You know, if you look for say, a picture of Britney Spears, then it doesn't really matter where you rank it, because you're going to figure out what you're looking for, whether you put it in the first or second or third position of the ranking. But if you're looking for the best econometrics book, if you put your book first or your book 10th, that's going to make a big difference how often people are going to click on it. Hmm. And so there you...
Do I need machine learning to discover that? It seems like I could discover it simply.
So in general...
There were lots of possible...
You want to think about there being lots of characteristics of the items, and you want to understand what drives the heterogeneity in the effect.
But you're just predicting, you know, in some sense, you're solving a marketing problem.
It's a causal effect.
It's causal, but it has no scientific content. Think about.
But there's similar things in medical settings. If you do an experiment, you may actually be very interested in whether the treatment works for some groups or not. And you have a lot of individual characteristics, and you want to systematically search.
Yeah, I'm skeptical about that. That sort of idea that there's this personal causal effect that I should care about, and that machine learning can discover it in some way that's useful. So think about, you know, I've done a lot of work on schools, going to, say, a charter school, a publicly funded private school, effectively, you know, that's free to structure its own curriculum for context there. Some types of charter schools generate spectacular achievement gains. And in the data set that produces that result, I have a lot of covariates. So I have baseline scores, and I have family background, the education of the parents, the sex of the child, the race of the child. And, well, as soon as I put half a dozen of those together, I have a very high dimensional space. I'm definitely interested in sort of coarse features of that treatment effect, like whether it's better for people who come from lower income families. I have a hard time believing that there's an application, you know, for the very high dimensional version of that, where I discover that for non-white children who have high family incomes, but baseline scores in the third quartile, and only went to public school in the third grade, but not the sixth grade. So that's what that high dimensional analysis produces. This very elaborate conditional statement. There's two things that are wrong with that in my view. First, I just can't imagine why it's actionable. I don't know why you'd want to act on it. And I know also that there's some alternative model that fits almost as well, that flips everything, right? Because machine learning doesn't tell me that this is really the predictor that matters. It just tells me that this is a good predictor. And so, you know, I think there is something different about the context.
So I think the social science application you're talking about are ones where I think there's not a huge amount of heterogeneity in the effects. And so...
There might be if you allow me to fill that space.
No, not even then. I think for a lot of those interventions, you would expect that the effect is the same sign for everybody. There may be small differences in the magnitude, but it's not, for a lot of these educational interventions, they're good for everybody. It's not that they're bad for some people and good for other people. And that is kind of very small pockets where they're bad. But there may be some variation in the magnitude, but you would need very, very big data sets to find those. And I agree that in those cases, they probably wouldn't be very actionable anyway. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other settings where there is much more heterogeneity.
Well, I'm open to that possibility. And I think the example you gave of is essentially a marketing example.
Those have implications for industrial organization, how you actually need to, whether you need to worry about the
market power. I need to see that paper.
Yeah. So the sense I'm getting is that
we still disagree on something.
Yeah, yes,
we haven't converged on everything.
I'm getting that sense.
Yeah. Actually, we've diverged on this because this wasn't the round to argue about.
is it getting a little warm here?
Yeah, warmed up. Warmed up is good. The sense I'm getting is, Josh, sort of you're not saying that you're confident that there is no way that there is an application where this stuff is useful. You're saying you are unconvinced by the existing applications to date. Fair enough.
I'm very confident.
Yes.
In this case.
I think Josh does have a point that sort of, you know, even in the prediction cases, where a lot of the machine learning methods really shine is where there's just a lot of heterogeneity.
Mm-hmm. And you don't really care much about the details there, right?
Yes.
It doesn't have a policy angle or something.
The kind of recognizing handwritten digits and stuff, it does much better there than building some complicated model. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of the social science, a lot of the economic applications, we actually know a huge amount about the relationship between these variables. A lot of the relationships are strictly monotone. Mm-hmm. Education is going to increase people's earnings irrespective of the demographic, irrespective of the level of education you already have.
Until they get to a PhD.
Yeah, it's a graduate school.
Yeah, but over a reasonable range, it's not going to go down very much. Where in a lot of the settings where these machine learning methods shine, it's kind of, there's a lot of non-monotonicity, kind of multimodality in these relationships. And they're going to be very powerful. But I still stand by the claim that kind of these methods just have a huge amount to offer for economists, and they're going to be a big part of the future.
Feels like there's something interesting to be said about machine learning here. So, Hidor, I was wondering, could you give some more, maybe some examples of the sorts of examples you're thinking about with applications of ML at the moment?
So one area is where instead of looking for average cause effects, we're looking for individualized estimates or predictions of cause effects. And there, the machine learning algorithms have been very effective. Traditionally, we would have done these things using kernel methods, and theoretically, they work great, and there's sort of some arguments that formally you can't do any better, but in practice they don't work very well. Mm-hmm. And the random causal forest type things that Stefan Varga and Susan Athey have been working on are used very widely. They've been very effective kind of in these settings to actually get causal effects that are that vary by covariance. And this kind of, you know, I think this is still just the beginning of these methods, but in many cases, these algorithms are very effective at searching over big spaces and finding the functions that fit very well in ways that we couldn't really do beforehand.
I don't know of an example where machine learning has generated insights about a causal effect that I'm interested in. And I do know of examples where it's potentially very misleading. So I've done some work with Brigham Franzen using, for example, random forest to model covariate effects in an instrument of variables problem where you need to condition on covariates. And you don't particularly have strong feelings about the functional form for that, so maybe you should be open to flexible curve fitting. And that leads you down a path where there's a lot of nonlinearities in the model. And that's very dangerous with IV because any sort of excluded nonlinearity potentially generates a spurious causal effect. And Brigham and I showed that very powerfully, I think, in the case of two instruments that come from a paper of mine with Bill Evans, where if you replace a traditional two-stage least squares estimator with some kind of random forest, you get very precisely estimated nonsense estimates. And I think that's a big caution. And in view of those findings, in an example I care about where the instruments are very simple and I believe that they're valid, I would be skeptical of that. So non-linearity and IV don't mix very comfortably.
No, so you know, in some sense, that's already a more complicated.
Well, it's IV.
Yeah, but
then we work on that.
fair enough. As editor of Econometric Guy, a lot of these papers cross my desk, and it, where the motivation is not clear, mm-hmm. and in fact really lacking, mm-hmm. and they're not big old type semi-parametric foundational papers, and so that's a big problem. And kind of a related problem is that we have this tradition in econometrics of being very focused on these formal asymptotic results. Mm-hmm. Kind of we have a lot of papers that where you people propose a method and then establish the asymptotic properties in a very kind of standardized way.
Where, is that bad?
Well, I think it's sort of closed the door for a lot of work that doesn't fit into that, where in the machine learning literature, a lot of things are more algorithmic. People had algorithms for coming up with predictions that turn out to actually work much better than, say, non-parametric kernel regression. Mm. And for the longest time, we were doing all the non-parametrics in econometrics, we were doing it using kernel regression. And that was great for proving theorems. Mm. You could get confidence intervals and consistency and asymptotic normality, and it was all great. But it wasn't very useful. Mm. And the things they did in machine learning are just way, way better. Mm. But it didn't have the properties.
Well, that's not my beef with machine learning, theory is weak.
I'm saying there, for the prediction part, mm. it does much better.
Yeah, it's a better curve-fitting tool.
But it did so in a way that would not have made those papers initially easy to get into the econometrics journals, because it wasn't proving the type of things, you know, when Brimon was doing his regression trees, that just didn't fit in. And I think he would have had a very hard time publishing these things in econometrics journals. Mm. And so I think we limited ourselves too much, and that closed things off for a lot of these machine learning methods that are actually very useful. Mm. I mean, I think in general, that literature, the computer scientists have brought a huge number of these algorithms, that are actually very useful, and that are affecting the way we're going to be doing empirical work. But we've not fully internalized that, because we're still very focused on getting point estimates and getting standard errors and getting p-values in a way that we need to move beyond to fully harness the benefits from the machine learning literature. Hmm.
On the one hand, I guess I very much take your point that sort of the traditional econometrics framework of sort of propose a method, prove a limit theorem under some asymptotic story, publish a paper, is constraining. And that in some sense, by thinking more broadly about what a methods paper could look like, certainly the machine learning literature has found a bunch of things which seem to work quite well for a number of problems and are now having substantial influence in economics. I guess a question I'm interested in is, how do you think about the role of theory, sort of, do you think there's no value in the theory part?
Oh, no.
Because I guess sort of a question that I often have, just sort of seeing the output from a machine learning tool, and actually a number of the methods that you talked about actually do have inferential results developed for them. Something that I always wonder about is sort of uncertainty quantification, and just, you know, I have my prior, I come into the world with my view, I see the result of this thing, how should I update based on it? And in some sense, if I'm in a world where things are normally distributed, I know how to do it. Here I don't, and so I'm interested to hear how you think about that.
So I don't see this as sort of saying, well, these results are not interesting, mm-hmm. but it's going to be a lot of cases where it's going to be incredibly hard to get those results, and we may not be able to get there. Mm-hmm. And we may need to do it in stages, where first someone says, hey, I have this interesting algorithm for doing something, and it works well by some criterion on this particular data set, and we should put it out there, and maybe someone will figure out a way that you can later actually still do inference under some conditions, or and maybe those are not particularly realistic conditions, then we kind of go further. But I think we've been too constraining things too much, where we said, you know, this is the type of things that we need to do. And in some sense, that goes back to kind of the way Joyce and I thought about things for the local average treatment effect. That wasn't quite the way people were thinking about these problems before. There was a sense that some of the people said, you know, the way you need to do these things is you first say what you're interested in estimating, and then you do the best job you can in estimating that. And what you guys are doing is doing it backwards. You kind of say, here, I have an estimator, and now I'm going to figure out what it's estimating, and then expose you're going to say why you think that's interesting or maybe why it's not interesting. And that's not okay. You're not allowed to do that that way. And I think we should just be a little bit more flexible in thinking about how to look at problems, because I think we've missed some things by not doing that.
So you've heard our views, Isaiah, and you've seen that we have some points of disagreement. Why don't you referee this dispute for us?
Oh, I'm so nice of you to ask me a small question. So I guess for one, I very much agree with something that Hito said earlier of... So one thing where it seems, where the case for machine learning seems relatively clear is in settings where, you know, we're interested in some version of a non-parametric prediction problem. So I'm interested in estimating a conditional expectation or a conditional probability. And in the past, maybe I would have run a kernel regression, or I would have run a series regression or something along those lines. Sort of, it seems like at this point we have a fairly good sense that in a fairly wide range of applications, machine learning methods seem to do better for, you know, estimating conditional mean functions or conditional probabilities or various other non-parametric objects than more traditional non-parametric methods that were studied in econometrics and statistics, especially in high-dimensional settings.
So you're thinking of maybe the propensity score or something like that. So
exactly. So
nuisance
things,
functions.
Yeah. So things like propensity scores, things, or I mean, even objects of more direct interest, like conditional average treatment effects, right? Which are the difference of two conditional expectation functions, potentially things like that. Of course, even there, right? The theory for inference, or the theory for sort of how to interpret, how to make large sample statements about some of these things, are less well developed, depending on the machine learning estimator used. And so I think there's something that is tricky, is that we can have these methods which work a lot, which seem to work a lot better for some purposes, but which we need to be a bit careful in how we plug them in or how we interpret the resulting statements. But of course, that's a very, very active area right now where people are doing tons of great work. And so I fully expect and hope to see much more going forward there. So one issue with machine learning that always seems a danger is, or that is sometimes a danger and has sometimes led to applications that have made less sense, is when folks start with a method that they're very excited about rather than a question, right? So sort of starting with a question where, here's the object I'm interested in, here's the parameter of interest, let me, you know, think about how I would identify that thing, how I would recover that thing if I had a ton of data. Oh, here's a conditional expectation function. Let me plug in an estimator, a machine learning estimator for that. That seems very, very sensible. Whereas, you know, if I regress quantity on price and say that I used a machine learning method, maybe I'm satisfied that that solves the endogeneity problem we're usually worried about there. Maybe I'm not. But again, that's something where the way to address it seems relatively clear, right? It's define your object of interest and think about...
Just bring in the economics.
Exactly.
And kind of think about the endogeneity, but harness the power of the machine learning methods for...
Precisely.
For some of the components.
Precisely, exactly. So sort of, you know, the question of interest is the same as the question of interest has always been, but we now have better methods for estimating some pieces of this. Mm-hmm. Right, the place that seems harder to forecast is, right, obviously there's a huge amount going on in the machine learning literature, and the right sort of the limited ways of plugging it in that I've referenced so far are a limited piece of that. And so I think there are all sorts of other interesting questions about where, right, sort of where does this interaction go? What else can we learn? And that's something where, you know, I think there's a ton going on, which seems very promising, and I have no idea what the answer is.
No. So I totally agree with that. But it's, you know, that makes it very exciting. Mm-hmm. And I think there's just a lot of work to be done there. All right, so Isaiah agrees with me there.
Didn't say that per se. But
if you'd like to watch more Nobel Conversations, click here. Or if you'd like to learn more about econometrics, check out Josh's Mastering Econometrics series. If you'd like to learn more about Hedo, Josh, and Isaiah, check out the links in the description.